Welcome to the Swing Factory Golf Show. I'm Justin Masenko, and I'll be here with Don Peterson. We figured we'd kick off this series by interviewing Don and getting to know him a little bit better. So for more information about us, you could go to swingfactory.com or my blog at swingfactoryjustin.com. We'll also list all our social medias and whatnot in the show notes as well. So enjoy the show. So this is the inaugural episode, the podcast number one. I'm Justin Masenko.
I'm Don Peterson. Welcome to the Swing Factory Golf Show.
All right. So what do we do this for? Why did we decide to make a golf show?
You know, I've had an idea of doing a golf show for a long time. I was actually a participant in a golf show down in Naples, Florida years ago. And there's people that I've met in the industry that don't... I think they have an interesting story, and we don't hear a lot from them. Yeah. I've got golf course architect friends that I'd like to share some of the things that they've told me, and other golf instructors. I think I'd like to share some of their stories and thoughts.
Well, you have a lot of stories yourself, so
yeah,
that'd be actually a good start to the episode. We figured that we would tell Don's story a little bit. So why don't you tell us how you got to this point, and how you became the owner of the Swing Factory and what brought you here?
Yeah, like a lot of golf professionals, my dream was to play. So I played on mini tours and bounced around different golf clubs. I was in Bedford, New York. I was in Chicago. Taught golf at some really elite clubs. Went down and I was associated with the Ritz-Carlton and the Registry Hotels in Naples, Florida. And down there, I was at a course called Pelican's Nest, and that was probably my first introduction to top-notch golf instruction. And I was the director of instruction there, and we started a golf school called the Florida Golf School. So that's kind of how I got started teaching. And
what year is this?
You shouldn't ask that. It was a long time ago. And but anyway, I started. I had a friend of mine who was a kind of a mentor, and he was a used car salesman, and we used to sit around and talk. He sponsored me when I played, and his name is Jack Berry. He's gone now, but he told me years ago, he says, Don, he says, write down everything. He goes, what your knowledge is what's valuable. He said, so write it all down so you don't forget. And then when I was starting to teach, I recognized that I needed to give notes to people. So I had some of my own thoughts about how to train. So my notes were always a little bit different than what you might find. Normal golf instruction back then was grip, stance, posture, and aim. So to me, those were things that you didn't need to learn the first lesson. I found that it was more important for students to learn motion. So I had a lot of motion drills and things that I started doing. So.
Yeah.
As I started writing down these notes to give to my students, it kind of turned into a pamphlet, and then it turned into a larger pamphlet, and then it turned into a book.
So. And I think that motion strategy when teaching the golf swing is really important, because I think arguably the most important aspect in a golf swing might be swing sequence.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because if you look at it, all the great players... That's really one thing that all of them have in common. They all have different stance and posture and grips and all that. But
yeah, I would agree. And I always tell people that I've held onto a golf club during a lesson just to make a point with two fingers and a thumb on both hands, and I can swing and hit 260 yard drives just holding the driver with two fingers and a thumb. And solid 7 irons that go 160 yards.
Right.
So it's like, how important is your grip in the hands if you can pivot and create a swinging motion of the golf club?
Right.
So not that grip's not important, obviously.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I'm just giving a demonstration of sometimes how you can train people and get different points of view across as you're going. So
I was going to say, this doesn't mean that you're not a believer in other mechanics. And I actually think there are instructors that just say, oh, just swing the way you swing.
Right.
And that's what I actually liked about you when I started to shadow you and started watching give you lessons, that you actually weren't afraid to make changes in people's swings.
Yeah, that's, again, that goes back to my history of teaching. It's like the first golf professional I worked for, it was John Cleland up in Exmoor Country Club in Chicago. And as a full-time teacher there, one of the main things he told me, he took me out on the tee, and we walked up and down, and he goes, Don, he goes, this is a private country club. He says, if you mess somebody up, he says, it's going to get around. And he says, you won't have very many lessons. He goes, my advice to you is don't change much. He goes, you know, and we went up and down the line, and he says, what do you see here? What do you see here? What do you see here? And I told him, and he says, well, just don't mess anybody up. So that was my first introduction to instruction, is to not make too much change. But yeah. Then I had somebody who was shanking the golf ball, and it's like I showed video of this guy to Mr. Cleland, and he looked at it, and he goes, well, what are you going to do? And I said, man, I don't know, but I know I've got to make change, because he's not hitting the golf ball with that swing. Right. So that's when I started realizing that in order to change people, you do have to make change.
Right. And you know, like, a little example of actually a video that's kind of going viral right now, just with the NCAA, the 2018 NCAA is going on, is this kid Matthew Wolf from Oklahoma State. And I pulled up, and we'll actually edit the swing on screen so everybody can see. But have you seen this yet?
No, I haven't actually.
Like, look at his feet through impact.
Yeah,
so it's just so many things going wrong there. But
right,
and you read the comments of that video and what people say about it, and people are either like, oh, he found his swing, it works for him, it's a beautiful swing. And then other people are like, oh, it's disgusting. And I'm like, it's kind of a, I think he could do a lot better if he embraced some other mechanics.
Here's the thing that you have to realize about instruction. There are people who can find a way to do something in an unorthodox way,
right,
and get the job done. So this guy's obviously a quality player.
Yeah.
He might not ever have to change anything. He might be able to go out and win with his swing. And I think the same could be said for, you know, you look at Dustin Johnson, and you look at the old Miller Barber of old, and you look at, I mean, there's lots of people who have kind of weird and funky swings. And if you can go out and play under par golf with a really weird swing, then you don't need anybody's help.
Yeah.
Right? Jim Furyk doesn't need anybody's help. So the opposite of that, though, is what if you do want to play quality golf and you don't have a motion that works? And that's where I came from, because when I was growing up, I didn't have a swing that could keep the ball on the golf course. I was really good at putting and pitching and chipping. I could score the ball whenever I kept it in play, but I couldn't keep it in play. So I had to rebuild my swing, and that's where I'm coming from, is I think that if people want to learn to play at a high level, there's a best way to rebuild. If you're going to rebuild, don't just tweak the bad swing that doesn't work.
Right.
Rebuild something that's the most efficient way of doing it. So that's what I try to point out to people.
It's just important to note that this kid Matt Wolf, he's an incredible athlete. You know, and all these people with funky swings are incredible athletes, and not everybody is an incredible athlete. So I think the average golfer should probably embrace proper mechanics more than. You know, the incredible athlete.
Exactly.
And it's not like, I was watching a little bit yesterday, it's not like he wasn't missing shots. Like there were shots he was completely off the grid.
Right.
You know, but he pounds the ball, he was able to scramble, and I think he won his match, so.
Yeah, I mean, you can't beat that competitive nature, confidence, and just believing you can do something.
Right.
And if you've got the ability to focus in and pull the shot off at the time, you can do it with a bad swing as well as you can do it with a good swing, I guess. But there's a lot of people who can't. So if you want to have a repeating swing, there is a more efficient and better way to do that.
Now, you actually wrote the book Baseball Golf.
Right.
Why don't you talk a little bit about what you believe the best mechanics are and what the ideal swing looks like?
I'll talk about the book for a minute. The book started off as it was the notes that I was taking for my students. So it became kind of a procedural manual of how to build your swing in kind of a circuit or a step-by-step method.
Right.
Because I found that when I took people back to just the simple movements and teaching them motion, that once I taught them the correct motion using the what we call structural muscles of the body, or core muscles, a lot of people talk about, that they were able to move better. If people are using their motor muscles and they're like, you know, lifting and you know, pumping or contracting their bicep muscles, and then they use their tricep muscles. Those are the swings that are kind of ugly, yeah. And we don't want to watch what happens when they try to hit a golf ball like that. But when you look at tour players, it's smooth most of the time, and it's syrupy, and you're not using your motor muscles as much. So when I was doing the baseball golf book, it was really a step-by-step. In fact, the original name of the book was Step-by-Step Through the Swing Factory with Don Peterson. But I had a chapter in the back of the book that was called Don't Blame Baseball. And I had a marketing guy who was a student of mine, and he looked at the book one time, and his recommendation was, Donnie says, I think you ought to change the name to Baseball Golf. And of course, it wasn't my idea. I didn't like it. I didn't do it for a year and a half or so, and then I wasn't selling very many copies. I thought, well, maybe I'll try his idea. But when I did change it to Baseball Golf, then I reworded a lot of the chapters and renamed some of the drills, and I made it more of a method book, so it is more of a how to swing on one plane, like a baseball, a horizontal swing. So it is kind of a method book. So then after I did that and I started selling this Baseball Golf, I actually went back now because I've been able to change things and add things to it. So the original premise was, like I said, it's a circuit training book. So it's really not a method of how to swing. It's more of a style of how to learn golf. So you can come up with a lot of different swings by teaching yourself to move efficiently. So it's called Beyond. I've got a new version of it, and I call it Miyagi Golf.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and I like that the term Miyagi Golf, because it really is, you know, the one thing we're trying to do is, basically, we're really trying to get to turn the body and keep the arms following. And that's right. Kind of the biggest problem we see.
The Miyagi Golf, just so you know, the reference to the Karate
Kid. Right, I was going to bring that
the
up.
The Karate Kid movie and the wax on, wax off, and the paint the fence. I always compared, the reason why I came up with Miyagi Golf is I always compared my style of training to Karate Kid. I said, if you've seen the movie Wax On, Wax Off, that's kind of how I train people. I have medicine balls that I train with and T-ball bats. And, you know, I use rubber bands around the elbows.
Right.
We do a lot of training that's without the club and a lot of a lot of training without the ball and some training without the club. And then we reintroduce when you're ready. So when you start making proper motions without the club, then we add the club. When you start learning how to swing the club, then we add the ball. And we actually start with a larger ball. I've kind of invented a larger ball that we use. And then once you learn how to hit the larger ball with an efficient motion, then we move you into hitting off of a tee with a smaller ball.
Yeah, I think a lot of those drills are perfect because they're specific enough to actually work in fixed parts of the golf swing, but they're also not specific enough to kind of make them unmissable. So the problem is when someone takes a full swing, you know, it's easy to miss a full swing because it's so complex.
Right.
But, you know, when you're turning a ball or holding a punch bowl or doing one of the drills, it's a lot easier to perform that motion. So you can perform that motion so many times that it helps your motor pattern for the actual golf swing.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Swing Factory Golf Show with Don Peterson and Justin Masenko. For information about Don's Miyagi Golf instruction book, please visit iTunes. Now, back to the show.
So let's talk a little bit more about how you came into buying the studio.
Never got around to telling you. So, I mean, it's a long story. I've been teaching golf for a lot of years.
It's a podcast work.
Yeah. So I went through the normal channels of teaching at country clubs, assistant pro. Like I said, I had my stints as a head of instruction at a golf school down in Florida. And always kind of knew that I was kind of working as a salaried employee. And to me, it's like I had to, that took all of my time. And I recognized right off that I didn't want someone else having all my time. So I was kind of drawn to having my own business. And I kind of took a leap of faith when I came to Atlanta. And I was working for a guy and at a golf driving range, and it was a really bad situation. It's one of those things where you come in and you expect a lot from what they promised, and I didn't get it. So I really got kind of almost pushed out of golf at that point because there was no money in the situation that I landed in.
Right.
So I struck out and found a driving range and worked a lease out and bought the company So that was the first one. It was a very small driving range with about a $2,000 a month lease. It was something I knew I could handle. Built my clientele on a small kind of rural area north of Atlanta called Cumming. And then another driving range came available about a year and a half later. Much larger driving range. The rent there was about $7,000 a month. And I ended up negotiating the lease for that. And I got in and had to completely rebuild that driving range. But at the same time, I started building my teaching and my following, and learned a lot about owning my own business.
Right.
So.
And yeah, that that's all very valuable stuff that you're teaching me right now. Yeah, as a recent college graduate.
So we ended up, the property values went up. We ended up selling the property. It was a lease purchase option, which was a fairly lucrative deal. And then we ended up here in Roswell, my wife and my son and I, and decided I wanted to have an indoor training studio. So property values were higher, and the economy was falling off then at that time, and property values started dropping. So to me, it wasn't a good time to get back into the driving range business. So opened up an indoor training studio. First one was about 1,100 square feet. I only had room for myself to teach and train out of. And I recognized right away it would be a lot more fun to have other teachers working with me and also having more space. I've got an idea of, actually, lots of golf instructors know this, but, you know, lessons once every 2 weeks don't work.
Right.
You come in once a month, and sometimes I have students that come in once a year.
Right.
corporate
Nestle
students.
Girl.
Yeah. Corporate students that that have a tournament once a year, and they want to come in and get a tune-up. But
well, I wonder if any of them are watching right now.
That's right. Well, the best instruction, and people know this, is frequent. So if you can get people to come on a frequent basis, then that's what we're trying to do. So we're trying to get people to come in, and it's more of a gym atmosphere, really. It's like come in and work out, but you're working out on your swing, your putting, your chipping, your pitching, fitness if you want to. I mean, There's a lot of people want to work on their game, and there's few that want to work on their fitness, even though they kind of go together.
Yeah,
you got to keep yourself in shape.
And a lot of those aspects we'll have whole other podcasts talking about.
Exactly.
Especially the fitness one. I could go on and on and on about that.
Right. That's actually Justin's expertise, right? Strength and conditioning.
Well, yeah, it's something I'm passionate
I'll
about.
I'll interview
we'll
him in a week or two.
We'll talk about that. So I think kind of to wrap this up, I want to talk a little bit more about positive attributes in a golfer's game. So I think I've asked you this before, but if you could give a golfer three or four attributes, it could be mental, it could be physical, it could be a swing attribute. What would it be?
Well, I think the best players, I mean, obviously you can look at Tiger and Jack, and, you know, you got to look at the top players in the world, and you look at Jordan Spieth, and I think it's an attitude, and the attitude probably comes from confidence in themselves.
Right.
They had some sort of positive upbringing, and I think that's key. Not that you can't build that. I've seen people that were able to overcome maybe a low self-esteem. And maybe Ben Hogan was known. Believe it or not, there's an old movie called Follow the Sun, and Ben Hogan was kind of known as being this great concentrator. It's like they called him Wee Iceman over in Scotland, and because he was so focused when he was on the golf course. But if you look at the movie Follow the Sun, there's a scene in there where he goes home and he kind of puts his clubs in the corner of the room, and he's complaining to his wife Valerie. He says, I just can't focus. He goes, I can't think. The people and the galleries and stuff. And he says, I need to learn to play my own game. So there's a guy who became the greatest concentrator that we know of in the game of golf. And he was kind of saying to us in that movie that, hey, I didn't start out that way. I couldn't concentrate in the beginning. So you can learn a lot of things. But I think the ability, the mental abilities in golf actually far outweigh the physical. Mm. And that's because you can train yourself to have a good golf swing. There are lots of people. Tom Kite was a noted, poor athlete, I guess, and a Coke bottle of glasses, but he made himself the best player in the world.
Yeah.
And there's lots of small diminutives, small players who have learned to play the game. Gary Player couldn't hit it very far. And
I mean,
short game
especially when you talk about short game, you know, people don't necessarily talk about it, but you know, when the swing is so short, if you actually think about the putting stroke, you don't need to be super athletic to have a good putting stroke.
Right.
Not at all. Exactly. You know, it's you're moving the club back and forth 6 inches. So it's not...
Well, the golf swing's a motor skill, and we can train motor skills.
Right.
You know, obviously there's handicaps and there's things like that that people have to look at and maybe overcome. But for the most part, I think the mental aspects of golf and the work ethic, right?
Right.
You got to have a pretty good work ethic. Golf is not an easy game. There's a lot of people out there willing to work hard to achieve it,
right?
To achieve success. So you've got to have ability to work at it.
So you got mental work ethic. And
what do you want, three?
Well, yeah. I said three or four.
Okay.
But that's fine.
Yeah.
I think I would add to that list, maybe say, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with those two definitely. Maybe you can make the argument that, you know, any golfer needs the time and resources to be able to practice as much.
It's funny you just said that, because I would have to add that.
Yeah.
When parents come to me and say, hey, what can I do for my child? I go, the number one thing you need to do is make it accessible. You need to get them on the golf course, because, you know, I grew up playing with Todd Hamilton, and, you know, I was always on the golf course, and if there's one guy that I can remember that was out there more than me, it was Todd. And
right.
The only reason why I say that is because there's times when there were lightning and thunderstorms, and I was scared, and I went inside, and that little son of a gun was out there. He didn't care about the lightning or anything. He was out there chipping and pitching and putting. So, if you're going to be one of the better players, you've got to develop all of the different skills, and that just takes time.
Yeah.
You've got to be out there hitting balls out of water.
Right.
I mean, I can remember spending a three-hour afternoon getting sunburned, taking off my shoes and socks down in a creek, trying to figure out, okay, what can I hit out of this mud? Can I hit it out of the water? And I can tell you for a fact, you can get a ball that's completely under the water out. Okay? Now, if it's a quarter of an inch under the water, you can't get it out.
Now,
unless you're Tiger Woods.
How many mud stains did you have on your shirt after that?
Oh, I mean, after you hit the first one, we just decided to stay in there. You hit one shot out of that, and you're kind of drenched.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
That's why we decided to stay down in there.
Yeah. You know,
my buddy was joking. It became a laughing contest, because when I took my shoes and socks off and put my feet underneath the water, I had these white feet. And he started laughing, and he says, "Your feet are glowing." So it was a fun time.
Yeah, accessibility is such a big thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if we were to add a swing attribute to that list, you know, what would you say?
Swing attribute, everybody would probably say flexibility, but I think you have to have I think it helps to have faster twitch or, you know, whatever it is. You can be small, but if you can swing the club with speed, and I've seen, and I'm actually one of them, I was about 150 pounds, and I know, you know, I can still swing it. I'm older now, but I can still swing at high speeds and hit long balls. So, and you look at guys like, Roy McIlroy.
I think of Justin Thomas. You know, he's 140 pounds or 150 pounds.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just a naturally really quick.
I was thinking of Charles Howell III. Because he's wiry and guys like that. So.
Yeah.
Having length is definitely a plus.
That's specifically, talking about neuromuscular conditioning or coordination.
Right.
Which is a fancy way of saying your brain can use your muscles efficiently, and if you're neuromuscularly coordinated, you're probably, like, a good way to think about it is you were the quickest kid growing up. You were fast on basketball court or soccer field. You know, you were just a quick person, and I really wasn't. You know, growing up, but as an athlete, I really was a kind of a slower person. So when I was getting in the golf, I was a really short hitter. I had to rely on actually getting stronger and more flexible to actually hit the ball further.
Exactly, and that's a show that I wanted to talk to you about having, because we need to interview you as well. So.
Well, I thought this was a good first run. So
yeah, and just so you know, this is our first run, and this is we're just setting up our desk and our studio. So this is. It's all going to change a little bit over the time, and we've got my son, Cade Peterson. I give a prop out to him for doing the camera.
Yeah,
it's kind of his forte. He's going to He's going to provide the cinematography and the audio and all that for us.
Does that make him our engineer?
He's our engineer. There okay. you go.
And then our studio audience over there. So.
Well, Justin, yeah. thank you
all right.
for coming on board. And I look forward to doing this show with you. And let's sign off and ask everyone to come back and see us again.
Yeah, tune in next week.
Thank you for listening to the Swing Factory Golf Show. Tune in each and every week to listen to more golf from Don and Justin. If you'd like more golf tips from Don Peterson, visit youtube.com/DonaldPetersonGolf.